it's another Sunday evening. On the road. Going out. Struggling with things. And the Jeffersonian liberal, who is me? Married to my conservative wife. And the priest is my pronoun. So interesting to watch the intelligentsia who have not sold their souls yet to evil bend the knee to Christ. It will be interesting to watch. If their faces will be pained, if they will do it with gritted teeth, but bowing to the reality of what it is. My least Jane's thinking about pondering putting in a few more years. Except that she says, I really don't want. What was her thing? I don't know if it was anxiety. I don't know if it was aggravation. I don't think she said the word stress, but it was all around those kinds of things. But she just really didn't want to have to deal with it. And I understand completely. All right, I'm going to roll up these windows so you can hear me better. There we go. We got a pretty good airflow here. Not too hot, not too cold, but it's all right. I think it'll be okay. Got all my stuff. I do not like parting with Lisa. And once I'm on the road, I'm okay. You know, I'm alright. Certainly not the end of the world. And I'm child care center. My cover letter that I used the last time I went for a CIO job, which was for ENMU Ruidoso. And the thing really came back that I wasn't really seriously considered because they really couldn't pay them an awful lot. And Ruidoso is really expensive. Beautiful. Lisa found it beautiful. It was kind of, I think she was kind of excited to be able to live in a beautiful place like that. Sad part is right now it's burning, I think, or at least close by is burning. And, you know, that's rough. Might be interesting just from the standpoint of I wonder if because I do talk about the fact that I had run daycare centers and done that kind of work, and I still hold the needed credential to do it. Oh my gosh, it's raining again, and I hope it's raining where the fires are. Cool it off. Now, that's one of the big things about fires is it has to have, I seem to recall from my firefighting training for a boat. Boy, let me tell you, do you want to have a fire on a boat? There's no place you can run to. Except a lifeboat. And that's not very exciting. Anyway, heat, fuel, and oxygen. If you take any one of those things away, it just will die out. So hopefully, because it's not too hot and the rain cools things down, water doesn't really kill a fire. The fact that water help starve two of the things. Number one is heat. It cuts down on the heat. Although if water's fire's hot enough, it steams, and I don't know sometimes if that's really helpful or not. I've been in situations where it wasn't. It really puts a kibosh on fuel, because anybody who's been camping knows that if you've got wet wood, you're going to have a pathetic fire, and likely no fire at all. You almost have to dump gasoline on wet wood and hope that as the fire, as the fuel burns, it helps dry out the wood enough so that it can burn. Anyway. I'm not an expert on this at all. I would think that outside of just the IT, they might go, hey, this guy could be the director of our child care center. And he wrote grants for child care centers. I don't remember if I'd specified that exactly. Anyway, so, we'll just see what comes. I'm sure I'm a person that has the best credentials locally for being the chief information officer. And can I be honest, I remember, oh my gosh, the rain's amazing. Really coming down. Turn my lights on. My forward lights on. Get out of this lane. And my windshield wiper is going better. Yeah! This is wonderful. Whoa! Whoa! That... I hear stuff and it's like, wait a minute, that's hail. I think I'm hearing hail. It's okay, my car originally came with hail damage, so I'm not particularly concerned about it. Boy, if it's hail, this should get a lot cooler, and that'll kill out these fires really well. The potential for it spreading down here is like zero because hail will bring down the temperature by 20, 30 degrees. Colleges like people being able to do multiple things. I don't mind doing multiple things. Kind of get a kick out of being the jack of all trades. Thank you. And I was hoping for big changes before. You know, I had originally, when I was working at Eastern, one of the first jobs I was really looking at was taking Brenda Bishop's place as the extension home economist. Came to shove, they weren't even going to begin to pay me anywhere close to what I was needing to make. The supervisor I would have had was a good friend of mine, still is, I think. We just haven't talked in ages, because, I'm probably the worst for keeping up friendships. When it all comes down to it, broken some rules, you know. I was the WIC lady, the only male WIC lady, and everybody liked me fine. They thought it was kind of groovy. They did. Of course, girls are going to be like that, you know. They just love being expansive that way, and it's wonderful. I don't want them to stop being that way. Funny, because people say, well, he's a feminist. You go, no, I'm not. I am not a feminist. I says, can I be honest? I said, I think it was a mistake to let women have the vote. And people go, oh, you know, because that's so far back in the past and so settled, and we've gone so much further down the road. And you go, oh, no, I think it shouldn't have been tolerated at that point. And I don't know if my explanation goes any worse. I said, but I give the example of Lee's very conservative, so she votes like a conservative. I'm a Jeffersonian liberal, so my tendency is to vote libertarian. You know, people go, well, I can't vote libertarian because I've seen the destruction, the horrible things that drugs do. And I want to keep the prohibitions on drugs going. And you go, you know, it says, I don't want people to get on drugs either. It says, but I've also noticed that we don't eliminate the ability for people to access and use illicit drugs by making them illegal. It just doesn't work. There's too much of a desire out there, and people are gonna break the law to fill the need. Basically, something akin to businessmen that have to have, you know, heavy artillery on them. And the most amazing thing is that when you make the drugs illegal, it's still a good business prospect you can still buy lots and lots of guns and ammo and use any given neighborhood as a shooting gallery. Still get drugs in through any of a number of interesting methods, and it still ends up being a profitable venture. Isn't that amazing? So it's like, yeah, this is, you aren't going to win by trying to make these things illegal. And they go, well, if we say that they're not illegal, that means they're legal and we encourage it. And you go, don't do that. You don't have to do that. It says, but the government can stay out of it. It says, this is probably the biggest thing for not having government schools. I wonder if the whole fact that there is no mention of education at all in the Constitution, I wonder if that, you know, people say, oh, that was just a glaring omission, and people just didn't understand the ultimate value of education. You're going, I can't think that these people that considered so so well the Constitution, the makeup of government, experimenting even with the Articles of Confederation, can't think that these were people that just didn't think education was important, or just kind of, boy, we didn't think about that. I'm pretty sure they were thinking that it was nothing that a federal government needed to have anything to do with. The encroachment of the federal government into the education system has been a huge, painful debacle, and always constantly in a constant war on some level, but not really, with how it was originally envisioned, which was either the states would be in charge of education, a lot of states ended up doing that, or a local control. And different states could do it that way, you know. There was nothing in federal government to say how that was to be done. And the individual states could handle it however they pleased, including just passing it off and saying, we're not going to handle it at all. Families can get together and make their own arrangements for schools and stuff like that. If they want to tax themselves, there are methods to create tax districts and taxing authorities to raise money for these schools if you want them public. And of course, there was always the private schools or no formal education at all, going more toward mothers predominantly, teaching their own children things. And I am a big fan of that mix, and I'm not a big fan of even states being in charge of government. I think that being in charge of education, I think that's still too big. it still allows the encroachment of strange things being able to come in, where if it's local control, local control can take care of it. And if you don't like the schools, then you just don't move to that area. And you can stay away from it, and you can have a different experience. It's a wonderful thing. Anyway, so I'm a huge supporter of the family daycare home in New Mexico. It's a wonderful thing. It says I'm very glad that there was a big push to really change early childhood education, to basically take another state's very centralized and, you know, we're going to tell you how you're going to do child care in your world. And I think they actually did put it in place, but then it was just voted out and said, no, we want to be able to do it however we like. The state can have an interest in hygiene and you know, how many kids you can have and sanitation and stuff like that. It says you can play that game, and that's fine. And just kind of rolled back to that, and it's really great, and I hope that continues to still be the law. I don't know if it's true anymore, you know. I'm very concerned that powerful interests, mostly things that wanted to crush family daycares so that all the kids would be forced into more school-like child care centers, mostly done in schools and financed that way. And you can get early childhood teachers to do that. That was one of the great unhappinesses that I had, was Eastern New Mexico University, where I got my associate's degree was specifically in daycare management, and my bachelor's degree ended up being in general home economics, but I have been working on my early childhood credential, and I finished up in home economics for the simple reason that was the department that early childhood education was in back then. And so I am very much a home economics oriented child care person. Not very long, I think it could have been quite a while after I graduated and went on and did other things, including a little bit of child care stuff. There was a lot of reworking of things, and all of the early childhood education got sucked under the education college, and formally became part of that thing. So it's a whole different attitude when it's like school teachers that want to teach pre-K. It says, and I'm not a school teacher. It says, never had an interest in being a school teacher. Mine, you know, I came from a home economics family-based place. So I'm in a whole different thing. And that's tricky these days, but to be honest, you know, it says I'm not interested in education. even though it started to be called early childhood education, I wasn't that way. I was a child development person, much more interested in child development and within the realm of home economics, which has a totally different feel about it. I've never trusted education. I think I'm quite vindicated now with the fact that education has been completely sidetracked by the whole idea of, you know, we're going to indoctrinate kids with certain attitudes that we think are better for society. And it really ends up, see, and that's always been the problem with education. The goals and ends of society were what drives it. And the individual child really doesn't really have, you know, it's more about, well, your child needs to conform to what society demands. And it's all about getting everybody on the same page. It's very teacher-oriented, education is. There may be a little talk about kids. The IEPs have to be there for special ed kids, but you have to understand, under the child development model, it said, this is, you know, it's like every kid is an IEP, which school can't tolerate too much. The whole point is to really get rid of your IEP kids as much as you can, or shove them off in a corner. And I'm not, you know, and it says, and when you're looking at it in a societal way, that's sensible. That's okay. But when you look at it from the child's point of view and from a family's interest in their child, they don't care about, you know, to a certain degree, there isn't a lot of concern about you know, meeting some kind of interesting norm. And I'm one of those kind of guys that I came from a child development background. The needs of the school and the teacher are irrelevant. It's the needs of the child that are important. They say, well, we care about the children. And you go, only insofar as you need to get them up to the point. You know, it says, come on. There's tests to be taken. There's, you know, there is a certain body of knowledge that must be inculcated in that kid. And that's the most important thing. The big thing that's changing now is they want to inculcate, you know, whatever it is, critical race theory, diversity, stuff like that. And you go, that's totally meaningless to child development. Child development says, here's this kid. We want to help this kid grow and progress. We don't really have an agenda for this kid except to give them an enriching environment. And I've got a friend who teaches kindergarten, and you get kind of the smell of these things. There's stations, there's places to go, there's things to do. Kinder, it was always a big question as to whether school would trickle down into, quote, preschool. A lot of people looked at it that way and said, well, you know. And when I talked to him, I smell that, because it's like, I remember when I went to kindergarten, we had colors, we played with the alphabet, lots of stories, lots of outside playtime. That was kindergarten, and kindergarten was still very much under the sway of the German philosophical idea of the kindergarten. That's where it comes from. It's a German term. And I think that was still true. And then all of a sudden you would go to first grade, and that's when, quote, school started. Kindergarten was really just to get kids kind of accustomed to being away from their parents. And by playing games and stuff like that, I think that was basically it. Just so that kids weren't in total shock in the first grade. Kindergarten was supposed to be a garden. You know, it was supposed to be this beautiful place where kids would go and smell the flowers, and some wonderful person would be there telling them nursery rhyme stories and introducing them to the beautiful colors and the wonders of things. And then, yeah, the shock would come still in first grade when they stopped doing that. And first grade could get a little bit more school-ish. And that's the kindergarten that I came from. So, you know. And the other part of the big fight was, or can we get the concepts of child development, which I think are really interesting, because some of the really bad things, and I'm not saying it's a really fantastic thing either, a lot of the bad concepts that have come up, one of them was called ABC, the anti-bias curriculum, which is evil. Sorry. One of those things that I hated, it was one of the big things where I used to do presentations on family culture and the importance of transmitting family culture as much as it could. And so I was always saying family daycare homes are fantastic. Do more of them. Let's let 1,000 flowers bloom. And you pick your flower, the one that you like the best. We're not gonna dictate what you're supposed to be doing at a child care center. Or in a family, especially in a family daycare home. I was against it. And I was also, I was teaching this interesting course called La Ristra at the time. I don't know if it's still around. But I was kind of the anti-teacher of it. I would get up there and tell stories about how I don't think these are good ideas at all. But, you know, I would say, here's their concept. And here's why this is a bad idea, and why you shouldn't let this get into your preschool. And I enjoyed that. I was so subversive, and I am a subversive person against things that I think are wrong, and things like the anti-bias curriculum, which smells a whole lot. I don't know how much of those kinds of ideas got into several other things. I'm sure that it morphed over time and it got wrapped up in a lot of other ideas. However, it doesn't matter. But yeah, I haven't thought about these things in years. But they've started coming up again as I've seen the political battles about what's going on in schools today and what's being taught, and saying that's got the smell of the anti-bias curriculum back in the 90s, and it was pretty much back in the 90s. I don't think I fully detached from all that stuff until probably about 2004 territory. I was working on an improving health initiative. I was a co-coordinator, just kind of this guy, for something I wasn't really very, I didn't care about, you know. I thought it was kind of pushy, and I don't like pushy things, I'm sorry, and I certainly don't like government being pushy about different attitudes. I don't like leftists because they're pushy, you know, and they feel like that their ideas are so wonderful and so perfect and so pure that they must push out every other philosophy. There can be no other one than theirs. There can be only one. That's why I didn't like Bill Gates. Because he was a guy that said, no, there's only going to be Microsoft. That's all there's going to be. I was more of a Gary Kildall guy, which is, you know, that says we can all live in this ecosystem. We have our stuff. You have your stuff. You do your products. I'll do my products. It says, and if you want to have competition, whatever. That's great. You know, I don't think he was against competition, but I think he was more along the lines of, you know, why don't we figure out how to split up the fields? I'm not really building something that somebody else has already built. There's plenty of things to be built, and each one of us can build up our, you know. You want to do a spreadsheet? He didn't come up with a competitor for VisiCal. He says, I do operating systems. You know. And Bill Gates said, no, I'm going to do the operating system. I'm going to beat the market. And I'm going to destroy you. And Gary Kildall's company said, okay, fine, we're going to do it. And went head to head. It was quite the fight for a long time until digital research finally just went belly up and got swallowed up by another company. And eventually just nothing. And, each company had their pet projects, but that was kind of the mentality and the environment that was there and that was encouraged, and I liked that. Now it's not. Now it's like, okay, everything's going to be governed on a school level for children. You know, all children need to be in school earlier. You know, every Democrat since, I don't know who, Jimmy Carter, Al Gore, had this wonderful thing. Well, we're just going to get them all in the schools, and it's going to be wonderful, and we're just going to water down the school curriculum so that it works for 3-year-olds and maybe 2-year-olds, and it's all about school preparation. Kindergarten stopped being its own little world where it's like, this is totally different from school, but yet, you know, it's got a room and it's got the stuff in its own environment. I went to kindergarten at Sunnyside Elementary School in Garden Grove, California, and I seem to recall that I liked kindergarten. I don't remember having a big issue with it. Maybe kids today do. I don't know. So the child development people were hoping that the concepts and the way of doing things would bubble up more into elementary school, that first grade and second grade might feel and operate more like more in the child development paradigm. And I think I don't really know how much of a mix there ended up being. You see elements of it, so it's not like something didn't happen that way, and there was a little bit of bubbling up. But said I'm just not interested in it. Education, elementary education. You get a lot of class in classroom management, stuff like that. How to handle groups of children, and how to use the concepts of group dynamics to control the environment. And it's very teacher centric. You know, you're supposed to listen to the teacher. It's all about the teacher. And how to help her get through her day instead of being about the kids and what it is for the children. And I know people go, well, we love the kids. I love my kids. And you go, yeah. I says, listen to what you're saying. Your kids. It's teacher-centric. They're your children. They aren't, you know, I'm not saying that you're stripping away their individuality, because teachers have a tough time doing that. Although they will combat and fight too individualistic of people. I think I was somewhat at odds with the master teacher at the CDC at ENMU, and I only think I've really had a concept of having a problem because she was an old kindergarten teacher. Now, I don't know if it was a kindergartner teacher from my time or later, but she was really big on school preparation, getting ready for school. I said, and I wasn't, and I think there is a huge opening now in the universe because SchoolTake took some horrible hits during during COVID. Because I tell you, you can't use group management stuff virtually. It just doesn't work. And let me tell you, a lot of teachers quit. A lot of teachers stopped. I've been getting more videos coming to me from YouTube, and I don't remember asking for them. But it has a whole lot to do with teachers who kind of jumped out and don't teach anymore, but do consulting and stuff like that. Because normal teaching didn't work. A lot of teaching is about classroom management and how to keep the attention of large groups of people, and not being very, not having the mindset. It's not that these are evil people. It's just that they've got the mindset that you're here in my class, it runs my way, and yada, 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 yada. And that whole motif is starting to crack in a lot of ways. A lot of people are looking for alternatives to traditional schooling, very teacher-based. They're really engaging, wonderful teachers will survive fine because they will still be engaging through things like YouTube and those kinds of things like that. The group discussion things, that was a huge thing in schools. The group discussion things don't really come out too much with child development because that's only one factor of child development is the social. There's a whole lot more to it. And schools really kind of centered in on the social. You know, that was one of their biggest ways to try to fight homeschooling was we socialize people. So a whole lot of that argument started getting pushed into it, I think, to the point to where it was all about using the power of social dynamics to build a kind of conformity. And group work, and as I progressed through public schools, I was public school taught. You know, my parents were doing different things, and you know, homeschooling didn't even come on the radar. It was me being conceptual about homeschooling and deciding that I thought that would be good for, you know, I was experimenting with my children to a large extent, and my daughter Shayna hates my guts, and it's because she got taken in by the transsexual cult. They call themselves a community, but it's got much more of the features of a cult. Anyway, but that's neither here nor there. You know, I put her into a circumstance where she was going to be quite susceptible to that. She wasn't doing well in the school environment either. And I'm not really big into conformity, you know. I'm sorry, I'm a Jeffersonian liberal. I am not conservative. I am not, these are all the things that need to be taught and we need to push them because these are the things that we've seen and proven valuable to a lot of people, and you go, that's okay, that's great, I'm glad, but I don't subscribe to that, and you go, and that's fine, you know, I'm not one of those sorts. So, yeah, and I have to come back, and I seem to recall doing a couple of essays about the difference between early childhood education and child development. I think child development is pretty much a goner now. I think it's pretty much dead. It's been subsumed by education. And even though some of the concepts of child development survived and got implemented in kindergartens, maybe a little in first grade, maybe slightly in second grade, nothing there. And of course, the biggest early childhood experiment by the federal government was, and still continues to be, I think, called Head Start. Very interesting, socially engineered, but it was strange in that it really took all of the elements of child development and squished them up into school preparation. That became the real measure as to its success. Now, never really a great fan of Head Start, but I ended up getting it. I never worked for Head. I almost did. I actually got on at a Head Start organization as one of their I don't know. I forget what the title was. It wasn't teaching kids. It was going to be more of their trainer for the people coming in. They had to go through a training program and come into all this stuff. And I'm really glad it fell apart and I went someplace else. The time that it was coming, I got offered a better paying job at an early intervention program. Which I had a nervous breakdown at. I was the director of this program, and it was just, I couldn't figure out what to do about it, honestly. And the way other people live there, it freaked me out. And we were having interesting issues. I was having interesting issues. I fell apart and didn't go that way. And I'm really glad that I ended up in the WIC program, which is very quiet and sedate and nice, and the pay wasn't as good, but it wasn't bad, and it was good for 2 years until it got boring. I got bored. Anyway, so yeah, and it's interesting this all comes up because this is interesting. There's a child care center being conceptualized for this, for Mesa Lands Community College. I don't know who put in the stuff to say we should do this. I'm sure I will be the wrong person, but I'll say, but they may very well say, well, you've got the credentials. We're going to have you do this. And you go, well, then we're going to do it the way I want it done. And it's going to be about child development. It's not going to be about school preparation, because a lot of these kids, they're going to get homeschooled, and the very thought of somebody being continuing to work, the actual concept of it, I think, is called unschooling now. It was something that was pioneered by John Holt back in the late 60s, early 70s. I'm sorry, people say, oh, I don't like the hippies because they were all about drugs and stuff like that. And you go, you know what it was about? It was about the introduction of some really interesting ideas. And you go, and some of them, I think we're okay, and I think others of them were horrible. And the problem is nobody remembers anything that came good out. It came good out of that. It was everything that came out. It came bad out of it. And let me tell you, man, this is like the whole thing. Let a thousand flowers bloom. Help these children get an active passion for the natural world, everything around them, people, things like that. Let family culture rule the day. And you see that more and more from homeschooling, and so the sickest thing I see is parents that try to basically mimic traditional public education in their home. Try to basically do whatever their thing is, a lot of them do, I do Christian. Christian homeschooling? And they go, yeah, I can tell. You're doing homeschooling. And you go, don't do that. I said, make it about your child and what and trying to understand what unique contribution that child can make to the world. And pursue that. And to be honest, a lot of this stuff died in the 70s, which is very, very sad, because these were beautiful things. There is a lady called Grace Llewellyn. I read a couple of her books. I don't know if she still does. A summer camp every year. For this kind of stuff, and it's all about explorations of oneself, and it's amazing, and it's fantastic. It's, you know, and you really get to, that's really kind of, New Agey, and you go, you know what, there are some things good about the New Agey thing, because we started finding out that other things were important. And I'm still one of those guys. You know, you go, yes, I am really, really intrinsically different from the rest of you. And, you know, and God had me marry this really conservative, the best place for you is school, but I think the thing that got Lisa to do homeschooling, and she did homeschooling. I knew that I couldn't talk her into anything beyond that. And we just went kind of the alternative schooling route, which was better. It wasn't what I had in my mind particularly, but you know what? I was too busy off making money. It wasn't gonna be, I wasn't gonna be able to work the way I worked, which kept me away from home a lot, lots of evenings away from home, you know, I couldn't, because of my job, I couldn't be dependent upon to do the things my kids wanted to do. And I am about child development. In the end, I'm about human development, too. Find your interests, find your your talents, and start pushing on that. And people who did that, you know, some of them went and had bachelor's and master's degrees when they were still in their teenage years for not being distracted by a whole bunch of, well, you aren't allowed to go in that direction until a certain age. You have to sit here and run through the factory program. A wonderful man named John Taylor Gatto was also, he's passed away now. A whole lot of these people are either extremely old and can't do this stuff anymore, or they have passed on. And how this works in taking what we've learned about how not just children develop, but people develop, And it's difficult to do because we are so wrapped up in the schooling paradigm that, you know, people say, oh, well, the teenage years are all about rebellion and fighting adult authority and doing all that. And you go, but don't you realize that that's the schooling? That is a reaction to schooling. When people like Eric Erickson were coming up with the various stages of life, they were doing it based on the fact that there was a schooling paradigm. Everybody went to school and did these things that they had doing. And it was all jaundiced by that thing. And what else could he do? Those were the only subjects he could get because there were so few people that weren't wrapped up in the schooling paradigm. And homeschooling didn't help because it was just taking the schooling paradigm and forcing it down their throat at home, so that your mom wasn't your mom anymore. People in your family weren't those people. They just became teachers. You know, and it was well, you know, here's our pre-baked curriculum about how to teach this, how to teach that. And it's like, oh, who cares? That's the schooling paradigm, and what good is that? You still had people who would grow up and still caught in the same kind of weirdness. And yeah, let me tell you, probably the only lasting effect to most of my children, my oldest child ended up going to traditional college and got warped by art departments. And I'm not a big fan of art departments because it's like, I'm sorry, I think you people like you introduced my daughter to all kinds of weird stuff, and now she's wrapped up in a transgender cult, and you encourage that. And you go, well, but can I be honest? Child development, they say it's child-centered, and you go, that's tricky. It says you need to be tricky. And that's a hard thing to be. And I've often come back afterwards and said, you know, children are not the center of the universe. We're trying, and here's the thing, I'm trying to prepare them for adulthood. And schooling doesn't do anything to prepare you for adulthood. That's not its thing. In fact, it's gotten so weird now, it's either about getting you ready for a trade, which is better than nothing, for sure, or getting you ready for college. It's mostly about college prep these days. And it's like, and college is becoming really not a fit place for most people. We should have far fewer colleges, which is hilarious because I'm going to end up going to work for a community college. I have kind of the interesting comeback that that community college tends to be a little more not leftist than colleges. Although the problem is most community colleges now are just seen as prep for the next 2 years of your college thing. I really kind of wish that my daughter had not gone the last 2 years of college. I think she had a wonderful experience at the community college. I think that when she went off on her own and other people had far more influence over her than her family, ruined it. And there was a whole lot about don't pay attention to your parents don't understand, your parents don't care about you. You find a bunch of people that, you know, that have very, very low standards, that have very few, make very few demands on you. and you start saying, oh, these people are wonderful, but then the demands start coming. You want to be a part of our group, you need to do this, you need to do this. You felt like you didn't fit in somewhere, you don't fit in where you go, well, you know, that's because you're transgendered. You're actually a boy. And you're going, no, you're not. So don't challenge what reality is. Anyway, but that, you know, I'm talking about other things I don't need to. Anyway, so it's kind of interesting to say, I wonder if this is going to be a feature of it. And you're going, I'm a very different guy. If you guys are education people, I am a human development guy. I'm about human development. And let me tell you, I think that's why, when it comes down to it, and I've got goals. And I'm all about setting a goal for someplace, and it doesn't have to do with what you do for a living. It doesn't have to do with having a particular skill and things like that. It has to do with reaching your highest potential, which is exaltation. So it kind of feeds into the priest side of me. And I find this interesting that this stuff is almost coming around full circle. It's almost like I passed through a phase in my life, like the phases of the moon, and the phases of the moon are coming back around to child/human development. And the way that is, life isn't about just keeping you busy. Although that's a good thing. Keeping us busy can keep us away from a lot of things that we should be avoiding. About sloughing off things that are life wasters. There are plenty of. I'm sorry to say that science has become psychology, and I'm not big on psychology particularly. I know some people that did psychology, but then they started branching off into human development. And saying, I've found out that we really need to help people progress, not conform with social norms so much, although in many cases this is important, but that isn't the end goal. And too many things are committed to that. School has a strange end goal. It's mostly to get a piece of paper that says that you've learned this body of, or you've been inculcated with this body of knowledge. And it's like, well, what does that body of knowledge achieve? And you go, not very much. And the sad part is, a lot of people come out of that with a piece of paper that says that they've inculcated this information, and they really haven't. It's been more about socializing them to I don't know what. My son Matt got socialized into kind of a non-entity, and what Matt wants out of life is immaterial. And so yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if when I get this CIO job, if they go, well, we've got this child care grant, and we really kind of want that to kind of come together. It kind of comes with our worldview. That, you know, we want people to come to school here, even if they have kids, and we'll have a place for them to take their kids so that they can keep going to school. You know, that was an interesting idea And I'm not saying that can't be the feature. You know, I also came to a thing that said that I really wanted to save poor kids. It was all about, I really got wrapped up, I wouldn't say in Head Start, but I got wrapped up in Maria Montessori and the things that she was doing to improve the lives of poor children that just didn't have access to a decent nurturing environment. You know, these were kids living on the streets, and Maria Montessori was a whole lot about really engaging children that way, really tactile. And then there was the Waldorf schools that had their own kind of take on it, and I was interested in trying to bring this stuff in. But it was Clovis, New Mexico. It wasn't even okay for a guy to be doing child care, which is great. Because now, would I actually be the teacher of the child care people? I mean, of the kids themselves? And the answer is no. I'm not really going to be the teacher of the kids anymore. You know, I would be the teacher of, well, there's a couple of deer right here. Not very far from, I mean, I'm just right at the edge of on. And there's a couple of deer just sitting there grazing on the side of the road. Thank goodness they didn't want to come onto the road. I'm really grateful for that. Anyway, so yeah, I at this point in my life, I've been teaching adults for a time, or facilitating what I like to call facilitating the education of adults. Which is really good, because I would just as soon these people pick up an individual philosophy and study that philosophy, whether it's Maria Montessori's work, or I don't know if you really call Rudolf Steiner Waldorf. I think it was really formulated by other people based on some of his early concepts. Anyway, giving out these things, having them go through just kind of a program of reading and discovery and writing about what they've read, how they feel, would they do this? And people could take the class two or three or four or five times if they wish, and each time they can do it for somebody else. They can say, well, that sounds interesting, let me try that, let me look at John Holt, and you go, fantastic, give me, you know, let's have you go through a couple of books written by John Holt about his philosophies, and look at applications. And make it, you know, I'm a project-based guy. And do a project based on that person's take on things. It says, and if you really like it, don't take the class anymore. Don't take it again, well, unless you really want to. It says, and we'll make it come back. You can do it based on the child development associate and what about it makes it interesting. What about it makes it work? And what you can do, how you might include this either with the children that you have, your own children perhaps, or in your environment, whatever's going on. And work, I said, people say, oh, Devereaux's here trying to blow your mind. I said, no, I'm trying to tell you that there's a lot of different ways to proceed. And we just want you to get a good grounding so you can have an idea of where you'd like to go. And we can do a class, you know, a 101 class, 102 class, 201 class, and 202 class. You can take the 101 classes as many times as you like, you know. So this is a community college. Some people come here to just experiment and to gain knowledge and to get access to a laboratory or to a class or an idea. This is and want you to pursue it. I'm going, how is this going to work? Is this going to make such poor schizophrenic kids? Because it's like we're using like five, you know, any given time there's going to be 10 or 12 different philosophies being almost experimented on with the kids there. And I'd say, well, you know what? I said, I'm not so sure that it needs to be unified. It's like, can I compare it to COVID vaccines? At some point they said, we don't care which COVID vaccine you get, and when you get a booster, you don't necessarily have to get a booster that's the same brand as the original one. And everybody went, well, what the crap is this? And you're going, these guys were scattershot. They were shooting a shotgun and hoping. And when you're shooting with a shotgun and you don't know what's really going to work, using all of the available vaccinations are just as good, because nobody knows what works. And you go, it's true of people. This is people. Any doctor will say, on some level, you can look at the regular thing. If somebody's feeling pain here or it's here, you do this test, you do this, you know, you take some blood and diagnosis, and if you find this, and if, you know, and you collect this little mound of data on this person, and you say, well, you've got such and such disease, syndrome, whatever. Said, and here is the treatment for it. There's this pill. There's this, there's that. It says, we're getting to the point, and doctors are excited about this, where based on your unique physiology, that, a little bit of US 285, which has all the earmarks where I am right now of being an interstate highway. It's a four-lane divided road. Now, you know, there's little roads that feed straight into it, so that means it's not interstate. But it's got all the earmarks of it, and you can go faster if you have to worry about a lot of things, because more people are traveling on it. Anyway. This is the major road that goes from Santa Fe through Klein's Corners down to Roswell, and then from Roswell down to Carlsbad, Carlsbad on to, after that it hooks up with I-10, I-20 maybe? I'm not sure which. And that's this road. Anyway, it's indifferent. I'm only on it for a little while before I get back on Highway 60, which is a two-lane road, 55-mile-an-hour two-lane road. Nobody obeys the 55 miles an hour on it. I don't think cops really care if you do or not. And that's what takes me to the crash site. Yay! The sun's not quite down yet. But anyway, okay, I'm sorry. I got off the whole thing. It's just like that. And so you can explain it to people with a COVID bent to say, do you remember when that happened? It's because it's scattershot. Nobody knows exactly what is going to work. And different things may work with different people. And a whole lot of these mRNA things, it's really funny that mRNA got pressed into this kind of generalized service, because most of the guys that were doing the mRNA research and doing, and it's gene therapy, it is not a vaccine. I don't know why it got pressed into being a vaccine. Regardless, it was gene therapy that was supposed to be based on an individual's physiology, and this was going to be a whole new branch of medicine that may still very well be trying to be implemented this way, but now it's probably just going to be used for vaccines now because it got pressed in the service. I'm sure the guys who came up with the mRNA stuff, and I seem to recall it, they said this was a bad use of this idea. This was not to be just broadcasted generally to everybody. Didn't know what that was going to do. It was supposed to be tailored to the individual. That was the whole point. You would take people's DNA, their genome or whatever, and you would actually make the manipulations in their DNA to solve certain problems. You know, these were supposed to be cures to things like, diabetes, where some people just don't have the right, things that get passed in a genetic way. These mRNA therapies, gene therapies, were being researched for being a potential solution to those kinds of things. The fact that it got pressed into COVID was just bizarre. But it could be done quickly, and that's one of the things that I think made it very attractive, was that it could be done very, very fast. And instead of making a gene therapy that was made for a certain person, they decided to make a gene therapy that was made for a certain virus. I don't know if that constitutes working backwards. Interesting idea, but yeah, that certainly wasn't where this thing was, where the original research was to be put. It was totally for something entirely different. And nobody knows if it did well. We cannot tell. We cannot say. It was the biggest human trial in history for something that nobody really came up with any kind of methodology for running this trial to see if it was effective or not. It was just thrown out there. And the only basic thing that was done was, do we see evidence of it killing a lot of people? If it didn't kill a lot of people, it was okay. It's like water. Is it not killing people? Okay, then it must be safe. That, I think that's where it all came from. You know? And you're going, yeah. To a certain extent, it was the world's largest throwout of probably something that was more of a placebo than anything else. It was made to make people feel better. That's why when they got it out, they weren't really wanting to stop any of the things that we were doing. You know this thing. Everybody said, oh, cool, I've got the shot now. I can stop wearing this stupid mask and stop, you know, keeping 6, 12, 8, whatever, feet away from everybody. And everybody came back and go, oh, no, you still need to do that. And you're going, that's because, by and large, this was a placebo from the standpoint of COVID-19. Now, it might very well have been, you know, somebody may have said, well, this will be interesting. Let's just see. We have never gotten approval to do these kinds of mRNA gene therapies in a huge group, widely. It was totally experimental, and it was only, it was only given to people who were otherwise going to die anyway. And that's how they got approval to do it to people, was because, hey, if it works, great, that person lives. If it doesn't work, he was going to die anyway. And here's where we got all this. Ta-da! And so, yeah, most probably, it was done as a trial just to see if it would have a really detrimental effect if it was used generally. If a general gene therapy was going to be useful. And it didn't hurt a lot of people. Apparently it did a lot of damage to a lot of people. Nobody's really willing to admit that this could have been problematic, because nobody wants to think that it was nothing but a fantastic, good faith effort to try and solve this problem. And to a certain extent, it wasn't. Scientists, researchers, private sector, big pharma, wanting to push something, mostly because once you push something broadly, then it's acceptable. Now, the mRNA stuff is out there, and you've already been hearing about, hey, this next time around, we're going to use the mRNA stuff for flu. This is new. Let's try it on that. And it's like, what? We're not sure if it really worked on this thing. And nobody had faith it really did. The whole thing of, hey man, guess what? Keep your masks on. Keep social distancing. Everybody go out and get more of this vaccine. Why? Because we want to figure out how this works. I wonder how it's going to work if we give 2. I wonder how if it's going to work if we're giving it 3. And in rapid succession, and you're going, wait a minute. And they said, well, it just seems to, you know, our studies say it was really effective. And when we put it in, well, it doesn't seem very effective because a lot of people are still going to the hospital. And it seems like COVID just by nature went through the course that most of these kinds of coronaviruses, of which one is the flu, another one, I guess, is the common cold, the normal kind of thing we get. Every season the flu comes, a lot of people get it, some people die, and then it tapers off and it's gone again. To the point to where there's a whole lot of people that don't really even bother with taking flu shots. I don't. Because it's just haphazard. When they get all the flu vaccine together, they just guess at what they think the particular strain of the flu is going to be that year. And I guess on a regular basis, they're wrong. But it doesn't matter, because if you take the flu vaccine, if you don't get the flu, everybody says, well, I guess it worked. And you go, but the flu tends to go right through the population anyway. Since so many people get the flu, now we don't have a control group of people who didn't take the vaccine. Because we don't, number one, that's a strange group and we don't want to tell people to do that. It was like the whole thing about there was no control group about COVID-19, because as soon as they came up with the stuff, it was all about, let's just get everybody to take it. And you go, there's no control group here. There's no control group of any kind of size compared to us just pushing it out. And when they say, well, it's science, you go, no, that's not science. Science is, there's a control group and we compare. Well, we don't have time for that. And you're going, this is stupid. We have no idea what this will do. Now we have really great athletes, fit athletes. There's a lot of them now, and we don't hear many reports of them, because they're really trying to keep it under wraps. These guys are falling down dead. And, you know, that comes back and says, well, it's heart inflammation. Of course, they're going to blame it on COVID-19 and swear that sports guy didn't take the shot, although some did and some didn't. And we're not sure. And it's like, well, and it's just haphazard, and it's more about covering certain people's butts with a certain agenda than it is about trying to figure out what's going on. The whole thing about trying to figure out if the vaccines are effective or not, or if the vaccines are causing these problems, that's totally off the table. If you even breathe that kind of thought around anybody vaguely involved in medical licensing or anything like that, you're going to get your license pulled. So everybody keeps their mouth shut. And you just find out that there's a lot of people that aren't taking these vaccines for various reasons. And a doctor may have quietly told them, shh, don't take the vaccine. You know, don't do it. If you're pregnant, please don't take the vaccine. We don't know what it does to anything. There's been a lot of uterine lining, what's it called, sloughing? Anyway, that it takes out your entire uterine lining. You are no longer going to be able to have children, because your egg, your fertilized egg, needs to stick to the uterine lining in order to be able to gestate and all that stuff, develop the placenta and everything. Everything starts in the development of a child. If you don't have that lining, it just flushes right out, apparently. But everybody's saying, oh, that's just talk. That's a conspiracy theory. The experts say, no, pregnant women need to get this, and it almost sounds a little ghoulish. Instead of being cautious, which you would imagine a medical professional would be with something that is experimental, totally untested, and unproven to do what it purports to do, and we have no clue what the side effects are. You know, when you turn on your TV and there's always some kind of drug ad in the United States, and they start rattling off all the things at the very end of that after they've told you how wonderful your life is going to be taking this medication. Somebody with a really fast voice starts telling you all about all the potential things that could happen, including, you know, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, death, you know, and they skip right past that as fast as they can. And you're going, this was done on these drugs after years of studies on animals, on all kinds of things, and then clinical trials with people that were nigh on to death or whatever, people who were paid to take this stuff under certain circumstances, you know? And we didn't do any of that with these COVID-19 mRNA, totally experimental gene therapies. And the medical field, by and large, is giving the entire thing a pass and saying, no, this is safe. The CDC and the FDA say it's safe. And we're just now starting to get a little trickle of stuff that says that the FDA and the CDC may have been in cahoots with Pfizer and Moderna, or may have just kind of slid this stuff through for political reasons. All kinds of rumors that even the little bit of testing that was done may have been fudged. Not really tested, but pushed through for whatever reason. Says it doesn't matter. A good doctor would be cautious and say, you know what, if you're pregnant, I think you should stay away from a whole room of things that you should just avoid. Almost every single one of those drug ads on TV talks about the fact that pregnant women should probably avoid this. Because guess what? It's not very well tested. Certainly not tested on how it's going to affect pregnancy and how it's going to affect the child. Because people don't typically go into trials when they're pregnant. Would you do that? Oh, I'm going to do this, and I know there's a chance that it may permanently damage my child. You know, who are you going to pay to do that? How much money are you going to pay somebody to behave like that? Sad thing is, there's probably some, but I don't imagine it's a big group, so you're not going to get a very good group to figure it out. Certainly not a control group. Well, it's not a control group question, but... So yeah, any doctor worth their salt would just say, you know what, I don't think this stuff is well proven. And given the fact that it's not well proven, don't do it while you're pregnant. But yet, both CDC and the FDA say, well, we've decided that this is great for pregnant women and little kids. Let's give it all to them. We'll just water it down a little bit, and in it goes. And it's like, you guys are insane. And the sad part is they've ginned up such a scare tactic that there are mothers that go, oh, I'm definitely going to get this because I don't want anything bad to happen to my baby. And you're going, this is the exact opposite of what you should be doing. When you're really concerned about your baby and what's going to happen to them, don't be putting experimental crap into your body. Are you insane? but the CDC and the FDA said it was safe, and you're going, they are not, they have not tested this properly. There's no way they've tested it properly. All they can say is, yeah, we've given shots to so many pregnant women now, and we haven't gotten back any reports that there's problems with it. We haven't gotten back any reports of kids dying or, you know, of this or that. It's because if you do give a report back that there's a problem, your medical license is going to be suspended. If you don't go with the party line, you're gone. So yeah, you have to come up with 1,000 other excuses why this pregnancy failed. And it's going to be years, if truth ever comes out, it's going to be years until it's like, well, we finally dug around in the secret data that nobody was supposed to know about, and we found out that a lot of kids died, or a lot of kids had some severe problems. The big shooting up. I just saw a documentary that I guess just got released recently about autism, and autism is shot through the roof. When my son got diagnosed with autism, I think it was, they were saying one in, It was a high number, in the hundreds. One in so many hundreds had autism, and it was relatively rare. You were seeing big clusters of it in places like Silicon Valley that nobody could explain why that was happening. Now it's down to one in... one of them said it was 1 to 35, and maybe even lower, probably 1 to 30 or 1 to 25. And you're going, that's significant, but everything comes back and he goes, nope, it's not a significant change. They all say, well, we're just getting better at identifying it. And you're going, that's interesting talk. When somebody comes in, they go, my kid's acting weird. I don't understand why they're having so many problems. This is a brain development issue. You know, I'm sorry, it's coming from a guy who has, I'm not God's gift to child development. I'm not God's gift to human development either. But from my standpoint, this is really suspicious. And you're going, is it being caused by the COVID-19 vaccine? Is it being caused by the COVID-19 virus? Which, I'm sorry, there is some evidence that this was a produced virus. That it was being produced in the Wuhan lab. Sad part is, our great public health savior, Dr. Fauci, was part of the kind of research that was paying for the development of these sorts of things. That was part of his thing. He was also part of, hey, let's take care of this whole other problem. The release of this stuff, and you go, I don't know if it was intentional release. I don't know. And it says, is there sinister things behind this? I don't know. And it's hard to say that there is. Everybody's trying to look for a smoking gun, and I don't think that one is ever going to find evidence or definitive evidence that any of this was intentional. Even if it was, we were doing Wuhan Lab was doing classified work on bioweapons for potential military uses, and that's what COVID-19 was. You know, and it's like, wasn't supposed to get out of the lab. I don't know how it got out of the lab. Somebody just didn't get into their hazmat suit properly and caught this crap, and they went home, and everybody at home got it, and, you know, it spread from there, and we saw what it did, and it was, oh my gosh, it was everywhere, and a lot of people died. And I'm not saying that the forces that were working to put together the COVID-19 vaccine were sinister either. I think they saw an opportunity when everybody said, we've got to find something to combat this with, and you know, in some boardroom, somebody said, hey, hi, I'm from Pfizer. We can produce something for you quickly. We'll take the stuff that we've been working on to create personalized boutique gene therapies, and we can just, instead of running through somebody's DNA, we'll just run through the DNA of that COVID-19 stuff or something similar to it, because frankly, we don't know what, you know, we don't want, you know, no, nobody wants to really let anybody really touch this stuff, because who knows, they might figure out that, it's a Korean bioweapon. But they'll say, well, we'll give you something that's kind of similar, maybe. And yeah, why don't you create a gene therapy, a real generic gene therapy based on that genetic set. You can alter the DNA to do something with this stuff. And it's like, okay, all right. And we'll call it a vaccine. And you go, how fast can you produce it? Well, we can do it in a couple of months, and we can start churning this stuff out a month or two later. Great, let's do it. And of course, Donald Trump wants to show how effective he is, so he encourages this kind of behavior. And everybody says, well, this is a great time to start doing this, because this guy wants a solution now. And we can give him something, and we can say that it's going to work. It's going to do something. We know that. It says, if we can just manipulate that thing enough, maybe it'll just deactivate it. And then, you know, that's just as good, right? And it's like, but this is totally experimental. We don't know what it's going to do. And we're not using it the way that it was ever intended to be used. But that's okay. All right, so there you go. Anyway, no, I didn't want to get into that, but it does. It has to do with development, child development, stuff like that. Why on earth would you introduce something that you have no idea what it's going to do to people? Why would you intentionally do it, and why as parents would you allow to do it? And the easy answer is, they didn't have a choice. It was foisted on them, and every single avenue that you were supposed to be able to trust . Whether it was public health or your local doctor was telling you about the absolute importance of all this. And everyone in the room was kind of chill and said, I want to keep my, for doctors, it's your livelihood. you've usually spent hundreds of thousands of dollars getting to the point to where you can operate as a doctor. And most of them have loans outstanding for a long, long time. And so are they going to do what they're told? So if they don't, because I'm sorry, you spend all this time being a doctor. If you don't end up being a doctor, what are you going to do? Work in a snow cone stand? This often is not a career field that you can take and do something else with particularly. It's like being a school teacher. School teacher prepares you for nothing except being a school teacher. Classroom management, you have a little bit of training in what you're going to actually be teaching, you know. You have to take some English classes if you're going to be an English teacher. You're going to have to take, some math classes if you're going to be a math teacher. And they've gotten better about that and saying, well, you need to take a few more math classes. He says, but, yeah, trust me. I said, I had all the knowledge to be a pretty decent teacher of technology, stuff like that, and when it came around to it, I didn't get re-upped to the next level. You know, I didn't get allowed to teach another year, although they gave me a certification that I could. I was then a professional teacher, you know, which was hilarious to me because it's like, you guys didn't like me. You wanted to get rid of me. I'm really confused about why you're giving me this certificate. That I'm professional now and I don't have to be, you know, coddled as a new alternative teacher. You know, I didn't go through teaching school. Like I told you, I'm a child development guy. And when I conducted myself that way, boy, let me tell you, did I get into trouble. You can't let kids do that. And they go, why not? Well, look at what they're writing. They're writing terrible things about you. And I said, I don't care. It's not about me. It's about them and their development. And once they get past this phase of just spewing their hatred and vitriol toward teachers in the school and stuff like that, I think we're going to see some interesting information coming out of these kids and them saying, oh, I'm putting together some, I'm interested in this, and I've learned this, and I've learned this, and I've learned that, and here's my sources, and I think it'll be great. And they said, no, so in fact, we're letting you go. And the guy said, it's because you didn't ever do student teaching. A 4-month student teaching thing, which everybody thinks is what makes you from a student into a teacher. And it's like, and almost everything about how to succeed in school, which I noticed from these YouTube things, this lady started talking about this is how you quiet down a large group of young people. This is how you maintain control of your class. It had nothing to do with the subject matter of your class. It was all about how to use social techniques to get kids to conform, to get kids to do what you want them to do. It didn't matter what the thing was that was being done. And you're going, you're right, I didn't go to school to learn classroom management. I don't know how to do that. And to be honest, from a philosophical standpoint, I don't want to do that. I'm not here to make things orderly. I want to see creativity. And I never really got to the point to where I could conceptualize that back then. I was very young. What, 20? What was I? I was probably in my early 30s. But I hadn't been doing school teaching. It's not like, oh, well, yeah, give them 5 years, I'll be fine. No one was going to offer me 5 years. They wanted to get rid of me. And it's like, you know, I'm about trying to encourage people to do amazing things. And that takes a while. Well-schooled children spend most of their time. The only thing that's really interesting for a good proportion of kids in school is trying to find ways to avoid school on some level. You know, there are some really, you know, girls do better in school environments than guys do. You know, which is really sad. Girls tend to be more compliant. That's why they like girls. That's why they give a lot of boys Ritalin, is so that boys will stop behaving like boys and start acting like compliant girls. That's, they found that that was one of the things that Ritalin could do, and that was really useful. Heck, I think there's schools that put it into the drinking water. You don't need the girls, but I'm guessing that the Ritalin really doesn't affect girls all that much. It really affects boys, or whatever, I don't know. Says, but yeah, this is, it's all about making kids sit there and be quiet and try to be more attentive. And, you know, and boys just aren't wired that way very well. You can't really get them to do that unless you really, really engage them and it's really interesting to them. If it's not really interesting to them, they're not going to sit there and pay attention. That's something that we found out from child / human development. Because we are interested in individual children. And giving out Ritalin is not an individual solution, it's a group solution. It is the way you get a kid to conform to the group. that's not human development. Human development does not behave like that. It just doesn't. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So yeah, since I am sure this will not be very acceptable. You know, community college often ends up being, for a reasonable number of kids, it often ends up being a repeat of the last 2 years of high school to try to get the last 2 years of high school to stick in preparation for you to go on to upper level education. It's kind of almost the special education version of the first 2 years of college. You're supposed to really, you know, help them get up to the point to where they can go into a field in their college years. I respect the more technical side of it, the VOTEC thing. That's the great thing, is that I was very much more interested in TAVS, the Tucumcari Area Vocational School. I first tried to get a job there teaching child development. Less about the philosophy, more about the mechanics of child care, which is sad because I'm much more philosophical than that. I'm a philosopher type. And so I'm much more interested in that. So the whole idea of child development being kind of a different thing, and people going, I don't understand. I don't see the difference between child development and early childhood education. And you go, I can tell you exactly how it is. It says the only problem is, in my explanation, I reveal things about teaching that teachers really don't want to talk too much about, which is I spend most of my time just trying to manage a classroom, and it's all about me. I am the center of attention. You listen to me, I am telling you what you need to know, And I spend most of my time trying to make sure that you're not disrupting my telling you what I know. I'm not saying that that is evil. I'm just saying it's different. And there's a whole lot of people that don't, that just wither in that sort of an environment. Because it has no interest in individuality. Sometimes you can put a little bit in there, but really not. Very canned, very staged. The curriculums are made for the basic ease of the teacher. I mean, it comes in a little box, and you just proceed from the front of the box to the back of the box. And these are all the things, and it's all been, they all say it's scientific, and I'm not saying it's not, of course. You have to understand, this is the same kind of science that got us the COVID-19 virus and the COVID-19 vaccine. Without a real, you know, does it really work? Is it really good? Is it really negative? It's like, no, but there are a sufficient number of people with EdD or PhD letters after their name that said it was wonderful. It was wonderful pedagogy. I am totally against pedagogy. Because it has absolutely nothing to do with petties, kids. It really doesn't have a lot to do with that. Now they have to give some, you know, they've got to have some elements of that, because you need to be able to generate the bell curve and to make it work. And the problem is kids are having big society screwing up our kids. And kids are messed up, and it's really getting to be problematic trying to get that bell curve to work. You end up taking what was 5 or 10 years ago a second grade reading curriculum, for instance, and you end up just kind of taking that and stamping on the side. This is now the third grade or the fourth grade reading curriculum. And that's basically what it is. It's just saying, well, we're not getting the perceived bell curve that we want to see out of this. So we're going to move it up to the point to where we do see it. And you're going, well, that sounds like you're dumbing it down. And you go, so, as long as it produces the results that we want to see, it's fine. And that's why you get people that are coming out of the other end who are demonstrably less educated. And I use that term educated extremely loosely. Less schooled, less able to pass standardized tests than 5 or 10 years ago. Very sad. But a child development person would look at that differently and say, let's take a look at this child, let's see what they've got, let's build on their strengths, let's work a little on their weaknesses so they're not an invalid. Let's see what interests them so that we can find a place for them so that they can find their talents. It's amazing. It doesn't matter how much you beat up their brains. It doesn't matter how much you chemically cauterize their brains. There's going to be some talents that manifest. Now, society is going to say, well, you know, they have to be able to do this and make change. stuff like that, you know, they're going to have to learn how to operate a business, and you're going, oh my gosh. And it says that's become one of the most complicated things in the world, not because it needs to be complicated, but because there's a certain need in society to only let certain people run businesses. Nobody wants a lot of competition. The best way to do it is to make starting and running a business so onerous that fewer and fewer people will actually do it. And you make it so specialized and so difficult that people have to get these advanced degrees just to run a business that almost anybody could do 100 years ago, because there really wasn't anything to it. There was usually no taxes around it to have to collect and try to do with stuff like that. You didn't need much of bookkeeping, because the only thing that the bookkeeping was for was to make sure you were paying your taxes. Now it's wrapped up in 5,000 things. There's auditing going on to have to do with all kinds of things. And you're going, what on earth does this have to do with producing a widget? You should spend your time being more worried about whether the widget works. And you go, you can't be. You've got to, you know, 3/4 of your business has to be about pleasing everybody that you've got to please to stay in business. Making a payroll, stuff like that, instead of saying, you know what, we're just going to make the best widget there can be. And, you know, and that's why you get a lot of people who say, I don't want to be in business. And you go, yeah, welcome. Welcome to the joy of who wants to be in business anymore. Not even interesting. That's very sad. Which means that if you get a kid that's got some amazing talent and doesn't know, you know, don't fall down into the universe of art. Almost everybody, I don't want to say there's been studies, but there's been a lot of circumstances. Back in the old days, 1930s, 1940s, no, before that, 1800s, it was basically well known that you could teach a person to make drawings. Almost everybody could learn the skill. It was considered a skill back then, as opposed to an art form. Now, drawings are now considered art, and it's stuck in the art department, which is really sad, because everybody should have a basic grounding in drawing. You know, anime, for instance, has become a mainstay among young artists these days. It's a big deal. Almost everybody draws anime characters. And let me tell you, all that is a skill. It is not an art form. It is not difficult. The technique can be picked up rather readily. You know, usually within a few weeks or maybe a month or two. And you could get a job as an anime person, not knowing that you have to do at least a half decent job of coming up with storyline and other things. You know, people say, well, no, art doesn't have a story, and you go, but you can't. This is just drawing, basic drawing. And many of the tenets that have been brought into art aren't really art either. Most of graphic design really shouldn't be put into the whole thing of art. It's a skill. It's a skill that you can pick up. Some people pick it up faster, other people it takes longer. But most people are perfectly capable and have and have all of everything required to do drawing. And, you know, because, yeah, I said, go back, many of the books from the late 1800s into the early 1900s had illustrations in them. And those illustrations were basically done by the author or by somebody who studied with them and knew how to draw. You know, if you had a picture of a beetle, you had a picture of a beetle, and you could see it was a beetle, and it was done very well. They would do a drawing, and then somebody, and this was a total skill set, would do a woodblock of that, so that when you put it through the press, the woodblock was there, and it would stamp out that drawing. And perfectly fine stuff. But this was not, oh, we need to go to some art school and find somebody who can draw this beetle for me, so it'll be in my book. Didn't have to do it. There was, you know, every town had a newspaper, and there was somebody who, usually the same guy who did the drawing, could also do the woodblock that was used to render the drawing on your local newspaper or on the local book that you're publishing. This was a normal thing. A talent that was as available as dirt. The talent came from one's ability to take a visualization and make it happen, like the exploded view, you know. They were called drafts people. I took a couple of classes in drafting, and that's all about, you know, pictures, drawings. Now mine was specifically about buildings and doing buildings according to a certain rendering and stuff like that. This was not art. I was not in an art department. This was drafting, a drafting class. And the guy who taught the drafting class, he was a drafter. And that's it. A draftsman. Sorry, draftsman. And let me tell you, draftsmen did beautiful work. You know, your whole thing was do this cog. Let's do an exploded view of this cog going into this block of steel, you know, and render it in from two different perspectives. Do it from the top, do it from the side. Do it from one of the corners so that you could get a sense for what it all was. And this was not considered art on any level at all. This was considered a mechanical skill that one could just learn. And yeah, so yeah. Most graphic art, it's insane. It should be called art. It's basically drafting. But you don't have that anymore. I think drafting is dead now. You know, it's been replaced by CAD and stuff like that. And to be really honest, that skill just isn't needed anymore. You put in a bunch of calculations, a bunch of formula about what you want it to do, and it'll take care of all the stuff, and it'll give you all the views you want to. You can spin it around 360 degrees. You can do all this stuff, and it's fantastic. And I I got in at the very butt end of doing it manually and the start of doing it with computers. We had an Apple II computer and a plotter and the software to do computer-assisted drafting. That's what CAD was. I don't know if they even call CAD CAD anymore. It's probably not called that anymore. I don't know what it's called anymore. If it's still called CAD, now it's probably computer-aided design or something like that. It used to be drafting. That's how I knew it as. Anyway, doesn't matter. But it's really interesting because, yeah, we have made something such a college thing when this was something that kids in the last 2 or 3 years of high school would learn as a skill and immediately take that skill and start doing drafting for any number of companies that needed drawings, diagrams of things. And now it's art and strange art, and you know, anime has a whole lot more to do with drafting than it does with art. But it is what it is now. So, what are you going to do? Art's been reduced to that level. You know, now there's an art school everywhere, and it's bizarre. Whatever. But yeah, predominantly peopled by a whole bunch of people that go to college to, quote, learn art, who are basically saying, I want to draw manga, anime, whatever. You know, and a lot of art schools are becoming, you know, comic, and going to digital stuff and trying to become animation studios, you know. And that's art, and you're going, the vast majority of that art is also drafting. It's so much like drafting because that's what it came from. It's just, you can do a whole lot more of it, you know. You can put in so many more lines, and you can make it look almost photorealistic, but it's still just the principles of drafting. It's mostly drawing. Your art director, it has very little to do with art. It has more to do with other things. Like I said, you know, digital forms are a bunch of defined lines, you know, or if it's 3D, they're polygons. You have a whole bunch of polygons. You say what shape that polygon needs to be, where it is, and where you stick it, and where you connect it to other things. And as soon as you're done with that polygon, and sometimes some of the earlier stuff, you could see the polygons. They didn't smooth it out. You know, you take it and you say, okay, let's smooth it out so it looks like a curve. And you go, there you go, and those polygons get smoothed out. It looks like a curve, and now it's the size of somebody's face. Now it's somebody's chin. When they speak, there's a ton of polygons working, but we can smooth it out to the point to where, hey, it looks like somebody's lips moving. And you go, there it is. And the better and the more, quote, realistic it gets, CGI and stuff like that, it's just more and smaller polygons. That's all. That's not evil, but is it a skill that you can learn? Oh, yes. Absolutely a skill you can learn. And the fact that the computer takes a whole lot of the drudgery out of it just makes it so that it's even more just a skill. As opposed to, well, I went to school for 7 years and I got a master's degree in digital computer assisted design, yada 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 yada. And you're going, why did it take you 7 years to do it? I said, you could do it pretty well with a couple of years of just learning the techniques and learning it's almost become a thing of mathematics. You should probably go get a mathematics degree if you want to be in digital design, because it's going to have more to do with how you move these things around mathematically to make the lips move, or to, you know, make it curl a little bit on the side so it looks like a smile, you know, make it look like Betty Davis. You try to, you know, and you give it enough movement so it has the movements that Betty Davis had, stuff like that. Then you get a coloring guy to come in, and coloring is another thing that is a skill that can be done. Don't have to go to school to do it. Oh, and you could say, well, I came from a prestigious art school. You know, who cares? It says, you just wasted a crapper load of money for something that you could have picked up on your own in a matter of months. And you'll probably be just as good. And it comes to the dumbing down, stuff like that. I don't really want to talk about it particularly anyway. So yeah. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with this chief information officer thing. Or if it's going to happen at all, if they're going to say, you know, you're just not the kind of person that we have in mind. And you go, oh, okay. I don't know if I need to start trying to include this in my other things. I don't like to mix religion in here. Oh, I got some gas. Religion and what I would consider to be philosophy. It's not really the way I think this stuff should be done. Okay, let's see. Wild TID. I wonder if I just put in a random number if it would take me. How about that for an idea? Oh, I've got a new Altoids can. Now that I don't sit on my supposed wallet, it'll probably stay in shape much better and probably last a whole lot longer. And, someone authorized for me. Sometimes I can't really see the buttons. I forget about memory. Okay. Not a bad price at all. Best price I'm going to get until I go into Albuquerque for a while. Anyway, yeah. Interesting idea. This is, come from a certain mindset that's not school preparation. And of course it's gonna be, dude, that's all that matters anymore. And you go, that's exactly why it's sad. And I don't do that. If you guys want me to be the director of the child care center, fine. You know, if you want to be school based, let's make sure that the teacher that you get is all about the school based stuff. But I'm a child development guy, and that's a totally different ball of wax, and I'm not into it. You know, and that's funny because yeah, Florence Wilson, who is the old kindergarten teacher, and she was not the child development person. That was Francine Stuckey. And I was much more happy and influenced by Francine than I was by Florence. And Florence was awesome. very happy I didn't go into childcare, because I was more of a Francine guy. You know? I like child development. I was not about early childhood, and Florence was about early childhood education. Anyway, so this is going to be... I hope I don't run out of juice on this. Let's take a look and see how we're doing on that report. Come on, baby. Are we still doing it? It's not listening to me. It still says it is. 2 hours and 31 minutes. Oh my gosh. That's a long recording. Well, let's just finish it out. But still recording, according to this thing. It's excellent. Fantastic. 9:19. I'll get to my thing right at probably about 10 o'clock. I have about 45 minutes left. It's probably more like a half an hour, but it doesn't really matter. Okay. Yeah. And that was the two different philosophies, and every master teacher they could get, it ended up being a kindergarten or a first grade teacher, and I think it really kind of went downhill from there, because it was all about school. It started being about school preparation, and Francine was the director. There was sometimes when she served as the master teacher, and I guess it went differently. I was long gone by then. And she was much more about taking the individual kids and trying to figure out what made them tick. Of course, when kids are really young, there's really not a lot of that to figure out. It's mostly about, can you skip, you know, it had a lot to do with the different realms of development. And I found it interesting because the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, of which I am associated with, decided to get out of scouting, stop using scouting and started using this new thing, which was very much about development. And it was about social development, emotional development, and intellectual, and I think spiritual, physical might be. I'm not sure what the four are. There's always four, but it depends on who you talk to, what's most important about the four. And all kinds of studies, you know, and we would come up and we would go through these tables that would tell you what a child at a certain age should be able to do in all these different realms of development. And one of the problems with child development was that it would say that if a child was lacking in one area of development, the job was to work on that, you know. If they had a talent somewhere, that talent wasn't so important as the bringing that person up to the proper developmental level. And I guess I wasn't really about that. I ended up doing some research and read a review of a book, and then I got the book. And you know, to be honest, usually the review of a book has most of the information that needs to be gleaned from the book. You don't have to read the book. Because when I got the book, I found that the information I got in the review was all that I cared about. They just went on and going on and going on. It was somebody trying to sell a consulting program about, it was about soaring, it's called Soaring With Your Strengths. And I really liked it because it said, it gave this whole thing, and I really, you know, I actually, it's actually on the website. You can go to Jay's World of Abstracts. I don't know what it's called on the homepage. It might be called Contractual Obligations, because this was research that I did while I was being paid to do the Improving Health Initiative. I don't know how much it really stuck with it, but it's something that I did for that time and gave it out to people. I don't know if anybody ever read it or not, but I did a lot of abstracts. And I really kind of liked it because it really highlighted a lot of stuff. Anyway, this was called Soaring With Your Strengths, and they told the story of there was a school, and the school had all the forest animals going to school. And they had classes and everything. They had classes in running. They had classes in hopping. They had classes in flying. They had classes in swimming. And so, you know, you would get the little rabbit. Oh, he did fantastic at running. He got straight A's in hopping. He got a D in flying because he didn't stay up very long, and he hated swimming, and he got an F in swimming. So what happened was that school said, well, shoot, this little bunny rabbit, you know, we're not going to give him any classes in running and hopping because he already knows that. You know, he doesn't need to work on that. Let's give him a lot more classes, remedial classes, and make him concentrate really hard on improving his flying. And since he made an F in swimming, we're going to make him spend the bulk of his time at school by the side of the pond, or in the pond, trying to get better at swimming. Because let me tell you, compared to the ducks, he's terrible, and we need him to get up to the point to where he's at least an adequate duck. And the whole point of the story was to say, well, that's just silly. Rabbits are made to hop and to run, and they do a wonderful job at it. Why are you trying to get him to do flying? He doesn't have wings. He's never going to fly. I don't care how much you try to get him to do it. And he's never going to be a good swimmer because he just doesn't come with the equipment for it. And the whole point was, and it was looking at society and looking at education to some degree, is to say, but you know that's what school does. If you're okay at something, they ignore that because they're so worried about trying to get you to do something that you don't know how to do. You know, it's all about trying to fix you with things that you seem to do badly. You know, that's what special ed is. You concentrate solely on the problems people have. You don't care if they can do 5 things. It's those 2 things that they can't do. You know, the speech ones where they can't say their R's right. I say ah. And you're going, if they were in England, they would be considered cultured for not using their R's right. Says, but in America, we expect you to be able to use your R's correctly, so we're going to spend all day sitting in front of a computer or practicing with a speech pathologist to say, shape your mouth like this and go R, you know, whatever they do. Lift up your tongue and do this. guys coming back and saying, you know what, if you succeed at something and you're really good at something, you should get even better at it because somebody's going to pay you for being fantastic at it. Nobody's going to pay you for being mediocre at something you suck at. Finally getting to the point to where you can do something. And it was kind of, it ended up being a little bit of an indictment of society because the society sets all these really high bars for people that everybody has to meet. You know, you better be a high school graduate. You go, running a cash register, like I said, like drawing, is a skill. I can teach somebody how to count out change in about half an hour, and they will do it right, and they'll do it perfectly every single time. And they don't even have to know mathematics, because it's not a mathematical thing. It's a process, and if you just run through the process, you'll be able to give people back change. It's that simple. You don't even need a cash register to tell you how much money you should give back. I ran a cash register in college at a convenience store. And, the manager taught me how to make change. And the manager said, I didn't graduate from high school. I got into working at a convenience store when I was 16, and I just got to the point to where I became a manager because I learned all the things that you needed to do to run a convenience store, to run a store, to make it work. It was like, wow. Now, I wasn't interested in running a cash register for the rest of my life or being the manager of a convenience store. It just wasn't interesting to me. I did it for money, and it was a skill that was easy to pick up. So I picked it up, and I'd show it to other people. Sometimes I still show it to people. I think I could probably teach my son, Matt, how to make change. And he would accept that he doesn't understand the value of the individual pieces. Part of his problem is that he's got bad discriminators, and I'm not going to smack him for it because I've got bad discrimination too. I can't pick out Morse code. Sad. I'm an amateur extra, the highest level of amateur radio licensure, which is supposed to say a lot of things about you. I totally just fudged it by being a decent test taker. And I got through and I got my extra, and people go, wow, you must be really good at this. And you go, I do very little in amateur radio. I don't understand any of the mathematics behind antenna design or anything like that. I don't know how to make sure that I've got the right resistance, the right capacitance to create a proper phase lock loop. I really don't. I don't understand any of it, but I studied enough and I memorized a little and I fudged the rest. And I passed the test. And that's how you get a lot of those IT certificates, too. I says, I fudged it. And I got it done. And they go, well, that's a skill. And you go, no. Well, technically, yes. It's a skill. But it's a skill that basically games the whole thing. I basically did it for my master's degree, too. I know how to write. Writing is a skill. And I was good enough to be able to, and I had some experience in technology. Not amazing amounts, but a little. Enough so that I could write all the papers that were needed and to do my capstone project. I got that done. And to do my thesis defense, which really wasn't much of a thesis. It wasn't much of a defense. Everybody liked what I did. Gave me a grade and even told me how creative I was. And you go, you know, it was just going through a process and running through the process and figuring out how to game the process. I did not listen to one lecture. I cracked maybe two books. And usually didn't read much of them. Enough to pass. There was one test to do, and in total there was probably about 30 papers to do. And I got most of the information that I needed off of Google and Wikipedia for things I didn't understand. I would read enough of Wikipedia to get a basic understanding of what they were saying, and then I wrote a paper, and the biggest part of the paper was making sure it had all of the criteria that was needed by the assignment. When I actually did my adjunct professor time, I did that for about 3 years. It was 3.5 years, I seem to recall. Yeah, I did 4, 5, 6, 7. I did seven semesters of business CIS 301, information technology for managers. Maybe for somebody who's not a technical person, but needs to understand the concepts enough that they can manage people who do understand the concepts. And I mostly took the process that I went through for my master's, and I just applied them there. You're going to write a paper. Your paper has to have these elements to it, has to answer these questions, you know, and that was basically what it was. They had to take, I don't know how many chapters, there were 20 chapters, they had to take 20 quizzes. There was probably 25 case studies that they had to write about, and then there was one term paper that had to be done. This was a junior, this was upper division class. People who were getting a master's in business administration had to take my class. There was, I taught one session of it, and somebody else taught another. One time, the other guy left, the other guy quit, so I taught two sessions. Everybody had to take it from me that semester. And then they hired another guy, and he basically just grabbed what I did and just used it himself. So I was like, well, okay. Because it was. And I didn't call myself a teacher, because it was like, read your book. Read what your book says. It's pretty good. It's a decent book. You know, everything comes out of it. The case studies come out of it. Those things come out of it. And you go, if you read the book on any level at all, if you answer the questions in the quiz, you know, it's a normal quiz, multiple choice, blah, 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 blah. And you think a little bit about the case studies and answer all the questions that come out of the case studies, you can totally flub the term paper. Heck, you can even ignore the term paper, which was, it was 20%, maybe 15, 20% of the class said, if you do a good job on any two of the three basic things that need to be done, you'll probably make an A in the class. And I would tell people this, you know, I wasn't keeping it a secret, because it was about, this is how you succeed in college. It says you don't even have to really know the material. And it's sad, you go, it's because you can render almost anything down to just a set of skills that can readily be applied from anything. And you go, well, there's, but then you won't know what you're doing. And you go, you know what? Most jobs that want a degree, they're going to pretty much, interesting, guys decide to park right there. Not the worst thing to do. You could probably stay there all night, nobody would even care. Anyway, and you can spend the rest of your time developing yourself. It's called bluffing your way through school and then to developing yourself anyway. And I'm not saying that it is the best way to proceed through life, but if you find school very boring, and I did, I spent most of my time writing in high school because I found it boring, the school itself. Even though I had gotten a computer at home, and my mother and my foster uncle, and you go, what's a foster uncle? And you go, oh, it's just somebody who was my uncle. He's a good guy. Love him to death. David Brown, fantastic guy. And he got me a computer, and he said, oh, you know, computers are fantastic. My grandfather told me, you just need to go into computers. And I fought him and fought him and fought him and fought him. I enjoyed it as a hobby, but I didn't want to make it into a career because I didn't want to be a guy who sat in a cubicle. And, you know, I went off and I did child development and didn't make a lot of money. But I did that for a few years. I used my home economics degree a couple of times. You know, I was the WIC lady for 2 years, and I went to, this is all not consecutive. I would do some technical stuff, and then I would do something else. You know, I would bounce back and forth between using the child development and just what little computer skills I picked up. Never went to school, never took a technical class. When I did my master's degree, it was a management degree, managing people in IT. And it just came from my experience in doing technical work. Regardless, anyway, I bounced back and forth. Ultimately, I never got back to doing anything home ec or childhood development-ish because I just needed to make more money than that could possibly provide, except to do it as like a professor, and I didn't, you know, getting a degree in child development was expensive and required a residence, and it wasn't available from the inexpensive sources that were available to me. I ended up going to Western Governors University. It's funny. I ended up using Western Governors University online, and they were mostly doing MBAs, and they had 2 IT degrees. And I said, well, fine. Since I'm doing IT now, I might want to stop doing IT, actual doing the IT gut work, which I'm still doing today, but I'm being paid an immense amount of money to do. So the money drives the thing. And I'm hoping that, you know, well, I don't know. I don't know what to hope. God may say, you know what, Nemro? Okay, fine. Go and get this, the CIO job. You'll finally be using that master's degree that you pulled together. And they go, yeah, hey, cool. People always tell me. No, some people say, well, you fake it until you make it. There's a couple of people at the job I'm at now that, you know, are fake it till you make it people. And they go, okay. I says, no, I don't have to fake it. I actually do know some stuff about this stuff. It's not so much faking it. It says, but yeah, did I bluff my way to a lot of the credentials I have? Yes, I did. I'm not saying that I didn't do some studying. That's tricky. The master's, I did very little study because I mostly did it based on what I had learned from being a computer tech. And I'm not dumb, you know. A smarter person could fake a whole lot. I don't know if I could fake a PhD, and I don't know if I really would want to. And at this point, I am. In 3 weeks, I turn 55 years old. I'm not interested in continuing to work. I've got my pension for working for education in New Mexico, which is I think it's a pretty good pension. It's coming up soon. I'm going to qualify for the pension. And the idea is I'm going to do the pension. I don't know what I'm going to do with my time. I can write, or I can do these kinds of things. Maybe I can finally concentrate on spending time making YouTube videos or a podcast or something, and finally figure out how to market these things, or finally get interested enough to do what it takes to market these things. And do that for a living. Or not even for a living. It wouldn't be for a living. It would just be to spend time doing it. So it would really be, well, you need to market it. And you go, why? I don't need the money. And you go, but you could make a lot of money. And you go, that's always when something really explodes and does amazing, is when it doesn't have to be amazing. When you're not trying to get money out of it, but you leave it open to be able to make money, that's when it starts making money. And you go, that's just life. That's typical. So chances are, when I'm 65 years old, I'll be making a couple of million dollars a year off of this stuff, off of talking about stuff like this. And getting people to say, you know, and you know, I always said, I wanted to be a writer, lecturer, and speaker. And you're going, honestly, I've already done two of those things, and being a speaker is just trying to get, and I worked on this a little bit when I was in Oklahoma City. I was looking at how one does this, and I was just looking at some fellow that I follow. His name is Jason Scott Sadowski. Right now he's working for, or he was recently working for, the Internet Archive. I actually ran into him. He was doing a documentary on bulletin board systems. He did a documentary on bulletin board systems. He did a documentary on text adventures. These were two things that he did when he was really young, and he got into it, and he got a lot of footage from different people who had done this. And of course, all these people are going, why do you want to talk to me? It was just me screwing around. I don't understand. And that was what BBSing kind of was. There was some big professionals. He caught a couple of those too. Anyway, but yeah, this is, and he started, you know, every single conference, every single uh, conference or convention that goes on is always a little starved for content. They're always starved for content. And you can have people who do this. And I have this buddy that I met, and we did. I kept going to this conference, and he would consistently always go to the conference too. He would be a presenter. He would present 6 or 7 presentations. It was not amazing stuff. It was just about what he had learned and some experiences he had. He called them professional development, and people loved going to him because it was fun. He was a very engaging guy, and he talked his place. He worked at a university, and he always talked them into letting him go to these things, and they let him do it. And it's like, wow, this is amazing. I forget his name. No way. Oh, I love that guy. I wouldn't mind becoming that guy, because that would take care of all that stuff that I wanted to do. Now, he doesn't make any money, but his school sends him off to this thing. He would usually bring his wife. He happens to be a Latter-day Saint, just like I am, which was always interesting. And he was a director, a low-level director in IT. And he was quite people look forward to him to come. And they would come, sometimes they would come and take the same things. In fact, I went to that conference for 3 years. The first year I took a lot of stuff because I was new and I wanted to get to know the software I was using. And this conference was somewhat about that software. The second year, I think I just almost went exclusively to his presentations, and then just picked up a few others. The last year I went, I was finishing up a big project, and I needed to go to some things where people had done that. Same kind of project, so I really needed to get some information out of them. So I didn't get to go to as many, but I went to several because they were, you know, it was really great. And that was what he did, and it was part of his professional development. And he would come up with these presentations that he would do for an hour or two. And he was just fun. And I said, I don't know if I want to do professional development, but you know what? If you're going to do it, you might as well do it, because you can stick in a lot of that stuff. And you can talk about what it takes to, you know, he was all about self-improvement, stuff like that, you know. And not a bad thing. It might be cool to kind of come up with a soar with your strengths sort of take off. It's not like those guys own the concept. You can certainly rework it and make it your own, so you're not stealing from this other fellow. Especially if you take it in their direction. Say, I'm not doing consulting. I don't tell people what to do and stuff like that. And he had written a book, and he would always say, hey, here's my book. Here, dude, get this. I've got his book somewhere. I don't know where I put it. But it was. It's like, that would meet my thing. And I forget what it was, 2002 or 2003, I read The Dilbert Principle by Scott Adams. And Scott talked about affirmations in there. and I had worked on that affirmation. And I said to myself, I'm going to be a writer, lecturer, and speaker. You know, and I didn't put a time period on it. Says, but, you know, I probably have already accomplished that thing on some level. It might be interesting to do a little more. I don't know if there's any money in it, but it would certainly keep me busy in retirement, especially if I could find somebody who would pay me to go. It's like, you know, I really need to get paid to go. Because I don't want to have to, you know, I don't want to have to go to these places just on totally on my own power. I could, nothing to stop it. I don't know if Lisa would even begin to want to go with me. Because, you know, she'd be stuck in a... Although, this fellow's wife, Joe, gosh dang it, I forget what his last name, Joe Belknap. How about that? I'm trying to remember what school he worked for. He's a guy, he's probably about my age, maybe slightly older, but I think he's probably about my age, right? This mid-50s. And he, I forget where he goes to school, Utah, I think it's Utah Valley University. And that was why I said, you're a Latter-day Saint, aren't you? And he said, yeah, I'm the Sunday school president. I said, oh, really? I am too, which I was at the time. And interesting thing to get into. I said, you know, after I retire, I might like to do that because it'd give me an excuse to go to a conference in a city, and my wife can go. She usually goes, and she just kind of, she'll hit the swimming pool or the hot tub, and then Joe's wife seemed to knit a lot, and so she would just sit there and knit and wait for them, and then they would go out on the town on the evening once the conference was over, and that was what he would do, and the Utah Valley University would send him there. And I don't think he was dishonest about what he was doing there. They just said, yeah, apparently they have, you know, there's a whole thing about professional development, and that requires going to conferences and doing presentations. And I, you know, and that was what he was doing. Professional development presentations. Just, you know, and it's like, I think I get a kick out of it. And you go, well, there's no money in it. And you go, well, yeah, but it's my professional development. Oh, anyway, okay. I'm at the site, as you can tell. Oh, I'm going to go to the bathroom, everybody. But after 3 hours, if you haven't left by now, you should have. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, yeah, Joe Belknap, yes. And, I'm probably to the point to where my president would say, well, you need to do some professional development. You go, great, I know exactly what I'm going to do. Says, and I'll go to a conference that's for these kinds of people. And talk to them about human development. And talk to them about all, you know, all the experiences, and come up with a whole bunch of stuff to give for handouts. That's
That's exactly what Joe did, and I just have to pick a conference that doesn't. Joe doesn't go to. Which I think he only goes to one. And you go, no, let's just pick a different one. And I said, Joe Billings, wonderful guy, Utah Valley University. Another reason why I should probably, oh my gosh. I can be the writer, lecturer, and speaker. I've already written tons. And I can just keep on writing. There's nothing to stop me from writing. And he advertised himself. He advertised his stuff. I've got tons of stuff on the internet. And says, you know, come on over. He says, I'm actually a priest. I'm an Aaronite priest. I go, what's that? I said, it's a guy who's a descendant of Aaron. That has some meaning. Very small meaning for Jews, although it's tied to a temple that doesn't exist right now, but we might be building that temple, you know. So yeah, no, I'm an Aaronite priest. So does that mean you're Jewish? And you go, sort of. But not really. You know, most Jews could say, I'm sorry, your mother isn't Jewish. And you go, that's not my dad. And that's where the Aaronite line comes from. It's not through your mother, it's through your father. He says, and I am a direct male line descendant from this, which is how you do it. There's not a whole lot of us, because that's a tricky thing. But it's true, I am. Yeah, I'm not, you know, I've got an older brother. And I've got uncles. And they've got sons. So, yeah, we've got quite a little group. If we don't get together, we don't do anything. Anyway, I can do that in my latter years, you know, given enough people, that's quite an audience. And isn't that what anybody ever hopes for as a writer, lecturer, and speaker, is to have a little bit of an audience? Oh. Anyway, time to stop this. And have a good night, everybody. Oh, 3 hours and 14 minutes. How long it took on the road. Oh, my goodness. Oh, tired. It's 10:03. Not bad at all. All right. Exciting morning. Or exciting evening. I need to go to bed. Talk to you later. Bye.